quite
unusual.
Hi, you're listening to the Quite Unusual podcast.
I'm Nicole.
I'm Noelle.
And I'm Aubrey.
And thank you to our special guest for this week, Aubrey. This week, we are bringing it back to aliens because it's been a while.
A long while.
A long, long while. But we're bringing it back. And today, we are talking about the Allagash abductions.
Yeah, we are.
Remember when we recorded last Saturday and we finished movie club?
Uh-huh.
And it was only like 7 p.m. Uh-huh. And then the next thing we knew it was like 11 p.m. And we hadn't even started recording our episode yet.
Yeah, I remember. It's 11 p.m. right now.
It is. Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. On the dot. Where did the time go? We were just chatting for all that time. Or were we abducted by aliens? Who knows?
Dude. I feel like maybe we were. Like, no bullshit. Okay, a little peek behind the curtain here for all of our listeners. But we usually, this is how it goes down. Nicole comes over to the haunted attic.
Yeah.
And we, like, chat with each other for, like, 3 hours before we start recording. And then it's super fucking late.
Yeah.
And then we have so much to do. We haven't fucking done anything. And then we start at, like, 11 o'clock, right?
Yeah.
But we didn't do that last time.
No.
We did the movie club.
Yeah.
I think we recorded a show before the movie club.
We recorded an after show before the before movie club, I believe.
Yes. And then we did movie club. And then I think we did a bonus episode.
Oh, you're right. We did.
And then I remember specifically looking at the clock and being like, wow, it is only 7 p.m. Right now. We have so much time.
So much time.
All we have to do is record one episode and then we're done.
Yeah.
We're going to be done by like 9 o'clock.
And then we just started talking.
And then all of a sudden it was 4 hours later.
Yeah.
And I don't understand how we talked for 4 hours.
Well, we could have been abducted.
We did just talk for 2 hours though.
I was going to say,
we're good at talking.
We talked for 2 hours before we recorded this. And it's a Thursday night and I have to work tomorrow.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. I'm working from home. I just roll out of bed, flip on a laptop. It's cool.
It's fun. It's so casual. Look at you.
Another fun thing that we actually forgot to mention, I guess, a week ago, maybe?
Yeah.
2 weeks ago?
Some time ago.
I don't think we even know the exact date. That's how much we don't give a shit. But it is our podiversary. Well, was our podiversary. We don't really know, actually.
Happy podiversary to you. Yes, it was our podiversary.
Yeah.
We released an episode about a year ago.
Yeah.
Technically, I think this is like episode 53 or something, but we deleted a few of them.
Yeah, those first couple episodes were rough.
They were touch and go. So they're gone now. But this is, I think, officially our 50th episode, right?
Is it?
I don't even know. We're so bad at timelines.
Shows how much we care.
We don't care. We're just here for the magic, the pageantry.
Yeah.
And it's been approximately 1 year, so if you've been listening since the beginning, thank you.
Thanks for sticking with us.
I'm impressed.
I'm impressed, too.
DM us to let us know, and you know what? I'll send you a present.
Yeah, so I think you texted me today and you were like, isn't it a year since we started this? And I was like, yeah, yes, it is.
And then that's where the conversation ended.
And that's where it went.
And then we immediately started talking about something else.
Yeah, no, we don't really care. We're not really anniversary girls.
No, we're not sentimental.
No, we don't really care.
No. And on that note, moving right along.
Speaking of Allagash and the abductions that we'll tell you about a little later, when we first decided to do this topic, you know what popped into my head?
Oh, I do know.
Allagash beer.
Oh, it's so good.
And I was like, I wonder if the Allagash abductions and Allagash beer were related in any way. And they totally are. It's actually a brewing company in Maine.
Yes. If you haven't had Allagash White.
Allagash White.
It fucking slaps, dude. It's so good.
It slaps.
Is that what the kids are saying?
I think it is, yeah.
Okay, good. I want to sound hip and cool for the fellow youths. Yeah. We are drinking it right now.
We are. It's very good.
And since, honestly, since you suggested this topic, it is all I have been thinking about.
Dreaming about?
Yeah. And the first time I ever had Allagash White was at Kuma's Corner.
Oh.
If you're a local, you know what's up with Kuma's Corner.
It's like the best burger place in Chicago.
It's so good. It's so good. And it's the first place I ever had it. And now I also want a burger. Mm. So I've been thinking about burgers and beer for pretty much the last week while we've been recording this.
So good. Also, this story was featured on our favorite show, Unsolved Mysteries, back in the Robert Stack days.
The Unsolved Mysteries with Robert Stack. Yeah.
They also apparently redid it.
What?
Like the episode? They used all of the same footage. I watched it on YouTube. It was very weird. They used all of the same footage. There was no new information. The only difference was that this episode was hosted by Dennis Farina.
What?
And not Robert Stack. And we all know it's all about Stack.
Is there anything better than Robert Stack's voice?
No.
I love it so much.
I know.
Well, you know what? I'm gonna walk back. There is something better.
What?
The reenactments. I love them so much. I watched this episode earlier today.
On YouTube?
Oh, it's so good, dude. Yeah. It's so good. I love an alien abduction reenactment.
I know.
It's always like blurry and like ethereal, and they're like, we were sitting there naked.
There's like a mist in the background.
Yeah, there's always mist, and it's like a white room otherwise. Mm-hmm. I love it. I love abduction reenactment so fucking much.
They're pretty good, but I guess maybe we should stop talking about reenactments and get into this close encounter of the fourth kind.
Shall we?
We shall.
Our story begins, as all good stories do, with a whole lot of wieners.
So many wieners.
The Wiener twins, to be exact. Jack and Jim Wiener, along with their friends Chuck Rack and Charlie Foltz, decided to take a guys trip, you know, just guys being guys, in August of 1976. The four men, all in their early 20s, were art students studying at the Massachusetts School of Art and Design. I did a little backwards math because I couldn't find their actual ages anywhere on the intranet.
Oh.
So I did some backwards math, and I believe that the Wiener twins were about 24 at this time.
Mm, yes, the Wieners. And we will be calling them the Wiener twins from now on, because we are adults and we can do what we want. And what we want is to make Wiener jokes this entire episode.
Quick question for you.
Mm-hmm.
If your last name was Wiener, would you go by Wiener, or would you go by Weiner, or would you just change your name?
I would. That's a hard
Nicole
question.
Nicole Wiener.
I would not. Yeah, I'd try to go by Weiner. Try to. But everyone's going to call you Wiener anyways.
And honestly, I feel like it's more embarrassing to just go by Weiner.
Yeah.
Like, well, I'm actually, it's Weiner. It's not Wiener.
Just own it, I guess.
Just fucking own
it. At that point.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I would do. Yeah, I'm Nicole Wiener.
Yeah. Oh,
it's
yeah.
A two-ya.
Yeah, I'm Nicole Wiener. You know what? Call me Big Dick Nicky. Big Dick Nick. That's what I am right there. Big Dick Nick Wiener.
Yeah, just own it.
Yeah.
You got to.
If you guys want Big Dick Nick Wiener on a t-shirt, let me know. I'll make them for you.
No.
And I'll send them to you for
free.
I won't even charge you. Well, our Wiener twins and the boys, they should start a band.
The Wieners and the Boys.
The Wieners and the Boys. Wieners and the Balls. No one's going to think this is funny.
My chair. Again. It keeps on going. Every time Nicole laughs,
like, ear. Well, the Wieners and the Balls decided that they would go camping near the Allagash River in the North Maine Wilderness. The North Maine Wilderness is occupied heavily by logging operations And the town of Allagash is only home to less than 300 people as of 2010, and it has risen substantially since 1976.
Really?
Yeah, it's a pretty small town.
Hmm. Wait, so it was even smaller than 300 people, you're saying?
Correct.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. This sparsely populated, densely wooded area is full of natural beauty. As a stark contrast to that beauty, presides a darkness. Dun, dun, dun. The area has been home to many dark and mysterious legends for centuries. The First Nations people who once inhabited the area told the story of the Wendigo, a huge, shadowy humanoid with feet measuring 24 inches long, with a voice that sounds like the moaning of the wind through the pine boughs, not unlike the pine forest in which it stalked its prey. Those who crossed the Wendigo's path would meet their doom. Lurking deep in the North Main wilderness also lived... Are you ready?
I'm ready.
The Dingball.
Well, that doesn't sound menacing at all.
Yeah, it's like the Wiener Twins and the Dingball.
That's the band name.
Oh, it's so good, dude. Should it be Dingball and the Wiener Twins, though?
Yeah, Dingball and the Wiener Twins, I think for sure.
Definitely that. This is a cougar with a ball-shaped mass, bare of hair and flesh, where the tip of its tail was meant to be.
Okay.
Yeah, so just picture like a puma, mm-hmm. with like a giant fleshy mound of flesh?
At the end of its tail.
Yeah, like a mace situation.
All right. I guess that's where Dingball comes from.
Really should be named something so much scarier.
Yeah.
Because the Dingball would sing in the voice of a human to lure out campers from their tents and cabins, only to crack their skulls with its mace-like tail.
Oh, shit.
And then eat their flesh.
Okay.
So it should probably be called something scarier, like at least like the Danger Dingball or something.
Like flesh-eating something?
Yeah. Definitely not something that sounds so cute.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there are the Will-Amalones.
All right.
Small squirrel-like creatures said to roll poisonous mosses into tiny small balls and drop them under the eyelids or into the ears of sleeping campers.
What?
Yeah. The poisonous balls would cause horrendous headaches and visual hallucinations for days following the Will-Amalones' visits.
When you first said it, I thought you said, Will I Am?
Will like, I Am is like stalking the forest.
From the Black Eyed Peas, but
yeah.
Wow. Okay, that's actually kind of terrifying.
I just listened to a podcast with Will I Am as a guest.
Yeah.
And he doesn't eat solid food anymore.
Does he just eat like shakes?
Yeah, he just drinks juice.
Why?
He says he no longer likes to chew his food. And I could not...
Okay.
Yeah, and I was so far removed from relating to a person. All I want to do is chew food, Nicole.
That reminds me one time, one of my coworkers told me that he doesn't like food. He only eats it to survive. Mm. And I said, I don't like you. Please stop talking to me. How do you only eat food to survive? You don't like food?
We're Who not the are same. You? I don't understand that.
Doesn't make sense.
Not at all. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Well, these stories were common knowledge in the area, but of course, four young strapping men wouldn't be afraid of such folklore. And as it turns out, they didn't meet a Wendigo or have their skulls crushed in by a deformed human flesh craving puma. They would go to meet Mr. Proby and his friends, the ETs. Also another great band name.
Mr. Proby and the ETs. Yeah. There's so many band names in this. I know,
we should start making band tees, bro.
Feel free to take any of those, listeners.
Dude, my dream is people to make, like, knockoff merch for us. I would love it so much.
Like an alien, Mr. Proby and the ETs.
And the ETs. Often regarded as one of the most credible abduction events in our history, the abduction of Jim and Jack Weiner, Charlie Foltz, and Chuck Rack is referred to only as the Allagash abductions. There have been multiple books written on the subject, of course, which I was completely unable to fucking get one of my hands on. Could not fucking find this book anywhere, dude.
Yeah, sadly, this is one of the ones that Hoopla did not have.
They didn't have it.
Which they usually have all of our books. I was so disappointed.
There was like an $80 version on Amazon, and it like wasn't even Prime.
$80?
Couldn't find it. I wanted to read it so bad. Couldn't do it. But luckily, there's tons of information on the internet.
Very true. And Unsolved Mysteries, so.
Yes. Watch the real one with Stack.
Not Farina.
No. Fuck Marina. On August 20th, 1976, a Friday night, the four dudes left Boston with their canoe, camping equipment, a few 30 racks of Natty Ice.
You just threw that in.
Yes, I just made that one up.
But it's fitting.
It has to. I would, wouldn't you? Come on, dude.
Especially, it's got to be Natty Ice with these guys.
Got to. So they were hoping for a cool wilderness adventure in the Allegash Waterway. When the four arrived at the staging area, they had to hire a pontoon plane to fly them in their canoes to the Telos Lake on the Allegash River. Over the next several days, they camped and canoed all along the river, fishing, drinking, having a good time, playing truth or dare, maybe just abandoning the dare part and just, I don't know, going full truth, telling their deepest, darkest secrets. You know, just like what dudes do on like their intimate camping trips.
Right. Like, I'm sure they also played a couple games of light as a feather, stiff as a board.
You have to.
Because you have to.
You have to.
Maybe even said what girls they had crushes on. Yeah. I mean.
Yeah. Maybe even like played spin the bottle like one time. We're just like, I just want to like, we're just like friends. We're just not going to like, it's fine.
They kissed each other on the cheeks instead.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But like one of them like accidentally like, turned his face at like the same time the other one was kissing him, and he's like, "Jack Wiener, what are you doing?"
And typical just, guys trip.
Yeah, it's just like boys being boys. Yeah, you know what I mean? Duh. Like whatever, who cares? Well, the group reached Eagle Lake on the evening of Thursday, August 26th, and they pitched their tents. No pun intended. They decided a bit later to go do some night fishing for trout on their canoe. The area was really super remote and very, very dark, so they decided to make a huge bonfire before heading out. It was to illuminate their campsite, of course, but also so that they could find their way back to the campsite when they were done. So it was like this huge beacon signaling the way home, basically. The four were out on the water in the dark with only the night sky and then, of course, the far-off bonfire as their sources of light. They were alone, but Chuck couldn't shake the feeling that they were being watched. In a later interview, he said, "I turned toward the direction from where I felt this and saw a large, bright sphere of colored light hovering motionless and soundless about 200 to 300 feet above the southeastern rim of the cove." Chuck was momentarily stunned, but he managed to gather his voice and began yelling frantically for the others to look behind them. It was there, rising slowly above the trees, a huge oval glowing object. The brightness waned, and the four were able to make out a gyroscopic motion, as if there were pathways of energy flowing both equilaterally and longitudinally from pole to pole.
Gyroscopic.
Oh, yeah.
Never heard that word before.
You never played with a gyroscope when you were little?
What the hell is a gyroscope?
Oh, dude, I'm so getting you a gyroscope for your birthday.
Is it the thing where you turn it and all of the...
No, that's a kaleidoscope.
Oh, okay. Getting the scopes messed up.
A gyroscope is like, they were like these plastic rings and you like put a pencil and you like spin it or something. I don't remember how to do it exactly. Uh-huh. And it like makes these like crazy circular patterns.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I think they had other names too.
I had no idea that was called a gyroscope, though. Interesting.
The craft was divided into four oscillating quadrants of brightly colored light. The colors changed fluidly and seamlessly, as if the entire object had a plasmatic motion to it. The light was thick and enveloping. This reminds me of the blanket of light that the witnesses at Skinwalker Ranch described. Do you remember that? There was like a woman that saw a spacecraft out her back window. mm-hmm. and just said that the light looked like it had a weight to it, like it was thick, like a heavy blanket, and it was textured.
Yeah.
This is what this is reminding me of.
Yeah.
Because they said that it looked thick and fluid, and like, it just reminds like me of
floating,
like a...
Yeah,
like a thick blanket.
Yeah.
Charlie Foltz took out his flashlight and blinked it on and off towards the object, signaling SOS.
Why the fuck would you signal SOS to something like that?
I don't fucking know. I'm going to say this was a huge mistake, and he was probably just like being like a little douche and being like, oh, I'm gonna do SOS to it and see what it says.
He's like, that's the only thing he knows, too.
Yeah, oh, for
Morse
sure.
Morse code.
Well, almost immediately, little Charlie made a fucking mistake because a tube-shaped beam of light burst from the craft and hit the water.
What if he actually didn't know how to say signal SOS and accidentally said, like, fuck you? And they were like, oh, hell no.
Oh, hell no. Or he was like, come and get it, boys. He definitely said one of those things.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't SOS, that's for sure.
No. The light reflected off the water as a bright ring with a dark center. Pretty much exactly like the reflection from a ring light in a YouTuber's eyes. You know, like when you guys watch the after show and I'm wearing my glasses and I just have like a weird like blue glow of ring in my eye.
Or I'm just like staring into the camera and my face is really weird because I'm blinded and I can't see anything.
It is blinding.
How do people do that with a ring light?
Lights are hard, dude.
Do we just have like a really strong one or do we just have really weak eyes? I don't know.
I don't know. I'm going to say yes. I'm just going to say yes
to both.
To that.
Yes, both.
I don't know. Well, this light began moving slowly towards the canoe, towards these men. Obviously, they freaked the frick out, and they started frantically paddling their canoe back to the light of their bonfire. Just as it seemed that they were making their way back to the perceived safety of their camp, the beam swept across the water in a fraction of a second and engulfed the campers. The events up until now were repeated by all four men identically. From this point on, though, their memories differ. As I was reading this, I was trying to, like, picture what this would be like, and I was picturing a movie, and all four men are viewing the same event from, like, four different vantage points, mm-hmm. like four different cameras trained on the same scene.
So you were directing this in your brain?
Yeah, it was very cinematic in my brain parts. So imagine that right now, unless you're driving, in which case focus on the road.
Yeah.
Charlie remembered paddling towards the shore, getting out with his friends, standing at the campsite, and watching as the craft moved away from them until it disappeared. Chuck remembered staying at the canoe even after the others had jumped out on the shore and ran towards the campsite. He remembers holding onto his paddle and being unable to take his eyes off of the craft, frozen in place. Jack gave a quote about the event, saying, I want to do a voice, but they're just like from Boston. I don't know how to do a Boston
accent. Are they
accent.
From Boston? You know how to do a Boston.
I don't think
don't
I
lie. You're being shy. Don't
I only know
shy.
How to do...
You know how to do Boston.
I accent. Only know how to do Ben Sadfleck.
Then do Ben Sadfleck.
I don't know how to do that. I am Batman.
There you go. Use that voice.
Okay, perfect. He said, it was just behind us, and I could see that we were never going to outrun the beam. It was advancing too fast, and I remember thinking, holy shit, this is it. We'll never get away.
Nailed it. That's Boston right there.
It's like South,
on point.
South Boston. Whenever I see her read, holy shit, I think, holy shit.
Now I'm going to too, so thank you.
You're
I really
welcome.
Appreciate that.
The next thing I knew, we were on the shore getting out of the canoe looking directly at the object, which was now about 20 or 30 feet above the water. The beam was still coming out of the bottom, like the object was sitting on the beam. It hovered there, right in front of us. Completely silent for what seemed like 4 or 5 minutes. Suddenly, the beam was pointing up towards the sky. The object began moving up and away from us, towards the southwestern sky, and then shot into the stars and was gone in just a second. But his twin wiener, Jim, remembered the event a little bit differently. He is quoted as saying, "There was no mistake that the beam was coming directly to us." Then I remember standing on the lake shore, watching the object hovering above the lake, 50 to 75 yards in front of us. Then the search beam went upward toward the sky and saw it moving away at a tremendous speed. We all seemed to be in a state of shock. We stood there unable to move or talk. Jim remembers the object leaving in a weird strobe light-like pattern. Like it would disappear, and then it would appear further up in the sky, and then disappear, and then appear further up in the sky, over and over and over until it was out of sight, to the tune of Staying Alive. Exactly.
Okay, got it.
When Chuck finally shook off his fear and, like, rebooted himself, I mean, I'm just going to put this out there, okay, maybe the others should have turned him on and off again. Mm. It always works for me, honestly. My computer freezes, just turn it off.
Yeah.
Turn it back on. Totally fine. Well, when he finally rebooted, he remembered getting out of the canoe and joining his friends who were standing on the shore. The group walked to the bonfire in a daze, almost like they had been sleepwalking. Suddenly, they snapped out of it when they realized that the once 5-foot-tall bonfire was now nothing more than a pile of red coals. They were all super confused. They had only been fishing for a short while. Some said less than 30 minutes, probably somewhere around there, 20, 30 minutes. They had built the bonfire to last for about 3 hours, using large, thick logs piled high and wide. So how could it have burned out so quickly?
Right, because you said they used it as like a beacon because they were out on the water to see where they were going to be coming back.
Right, so if you have to see it on the shore from the lake, it's got to be huge. Mm-hmm. But how could they have no memory of this fire burning out so fast? Mm-hmm. Which is something that we see basically in every single abduction. There's just large swaths of missing time, hours on end, just completely unable to be accounted for.
Yeah.
Like when we were recording last week.
And we lost 4 hours? Uh-huh. 5 hours?
Yeah.
Yeah. We were abducted, man.
We were. And dropped right back here. And then all of a sudden our champagne bottle was empty.
We had a full champagne bottle when we left.
It was so weird. It was just so crazy. The four men thought that this was super weird, but they never used the word alien or abduction to describe it at this time. They didn't even really talk about it amongst themselves too much. Jack remembers, quote, "The unusual thing is that we didn't stay up for hours to discuss this thing," which is what you'd think four young guys on a camping trip would do. "We just seemed very fatigued and we wanted to go to bed."
Well, yeah, because they had already played like 7 games of Light as a Feather, and Chuck wanted to go again. And everyone was like, "Chuck, we've already lifted you like 3 times. We're tired. And we want to go to bed."
Right. He's like, "Well, I'm already stiff as a board. So just like get me Light as a Feather." It's like, wow, it's a really erotic camping trip that we're on right now. But it was fine. They all liked it.
Yeah. It's a guy's trip. It's what you do on a guy's trip.
That's what they do.
It's what they do.
That's I've read the books.
Every guy knows.
I've read the camping fanfic on Reddit, and I know exactly how it turns out. That morning, they got up, packed up their camp, and they paddled to the next campsite. The group did claim to have an unusual experience before leaving their campsite with a park ranger who was on duty in the area. The group brought up the bright light and asked if the ranger had seen it. He very quickly dismissed it, and he attributed the lights to the grand opening at a hardware store in the town of Millinocket, which is nearby. Right. He'd claimed to have seen, quote, "these guys operating a searchlight in the back of a pickup."
Yeah, that's definitely it. Right on the head.
Any sentence that starts with, no, "I saw these guys," is probably legit. But here's a question I have. Mm-hmm. Why would a hardware store have a grand opening at 9 p.m. at night?
Why is a hardware store having a grand opening in general?
Yeah, that's also a pretty weird question.
Why are they needing a giant spotlight for their grand opening?
You see these guys. They have this spotlight, right?
It's a little dramatic, if you ask me. Especially in a town with 300 people. Do you need the spotlight? I don't think so.
What else are these guys going to do on a Friday night?
I guess.
Their trip lasted about 6 more days, and it was mostly uneventful. When the group got back home, they tried to move on with their lives. Everything was all right. Nicole, right? Everything was all right?
Everything was not all right.
What?
After the trip, everything seemed to be fine. The men agreed that what had happened that night was very strange. A possible UFO sighting, sure, but hey, that's all it was, right?
Yeah, just guys being guys, you know, it's just like, whatever, like the Wiener twins are there, and it's just like, oh, someone's just like chilling, it's fine, like whatever. Maybe like we lost a large piece of our life, but we're just going to move on because that's what happens when you camp with the dudes.
What happens in boys' trip stays in the boys' trip.
That's right.
It's the motto.
Yeah.
Well, that's not right. Because in fact, around 1988, Jim Wiener of Wiener Brothers fame suffered from a head injury resulting from a fall.
Oh, no.
This injury caused temporolimbic epilepsy and caused him to start having seizures. After this fall, Jim started to have really, really strange reoccurring nightmares. Jim would dream about him and the three other men, the other Wiener, his twin Jack, Charlie Foltz, and Chuck Rack, being naked in a weird room.
Yeah, it's just Jim and Jack Wiener. Charlie and Chuck just sitting in a room naked. And it was weird because it wasn't in the woods.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it had been in the woods, he would have been like, yeah, it's just a dream, not a nightmare.
Just guys' trip.
Just guys being guys.
Jim said, I'm not going to do a voice here either.
Because no, there's no voices in this one.
There's no voices.
No, sorry, guys.
I'm not good at them anyways. I was starting to have nightmares, really terrible nightmares that I could not explain. I found myself in a very brightly lit room.
It's a bit brightly lit.
There's the accent for the episode.
That's the accent thing, guys. That and holy shit. Fucking nailing it.
I found myself in a very brightly lit room. I had no idea where I was or why I was there. To my left, I could see my brother Jack, Chuck Rack, and Charlie Foltz sitting on some type of bench, and they were all naked. I was wondering why they weren't helping me because I felt like I was in danger, and while I'm trying to figure this out, I noticed this dark figure or shadowy type figure emerging from this light, this bright light in front of me. I would wake up, sweating and breathing heavily, and just in a state of terror and shock.
Wow, I get like that when I watch Cops.
You get all sweaty?
I get all sweaty and I breathe heavy.
And then you go put your nutsack on someone's drum set?
Yeah. Just on the Wiener Twins drum set.
Not only was Jim having strange dreams, he would also wake up in the middle of the night and see weird humanoid creatures surrounding his bed. Sometimes they were poking him with needles. Sometimes Jim felt as though he were levitating from his bed. And sometimes Jim felt like they were doing something with his genitals.
Something good?
No.
Oh, no. So you're telling me that he was having these nightmares where he was light as a feather, stiff as a board, and someone was touching his genitals?
Yeah. That's exactly what I'm telling you.
Sounds like a dream to me, baby.
He said in his dream that he felt like he was in danger and he was wondering why his friends weren't helping him. He would wake up sweating profusely, out of breath, always in a state of panic, and just pure terror. And these dreams went on, and Jim did nothing. Only his wife Mary knew about these dreams. That is until Jim's doctor, who was regularly treating him from his fall, his doctor noticed that there was something not right with him, and he saw that Jim was very overtired, and he asked Jim what was going on. Jim, at first, did not want to tell his doctor about anything, but his doctor told him that whatever was going on was interfering with his treatments, and he convinced him that he needed to know in order to help Jim get better. So Jim confessed. He told his doctor all about the wild dreams, the sleep paralysis, and even the humanoid beings playing with his genitals.
Nice. This doctor was like, wait, 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 slow down. I'm writing this down. Hold on, I'm writing this down. Okay, and they did what? Okay, they did what? Okay. And were they wearing lipstick? No?
Okay. Jim also mentioned his trip to the Allagash Waterway and what the men saw, and that he believed that he was missing time from that trip. Jim's doctor surprisingly believed him and was very familiar with this sort of thing, and suggested that Jim contact a UFO researcher to get more help.
This is shockingly supportive.
Yeah.
Dude, I can't go to the doctor and say something is actually wrong without them being like, are you sure it's not just period cramps?
And even when you do, they're like, take this morphine. It's fine.
Yeah.
Drink this radium.
Drink this radium water. It'll put sunshine in your cheeks.
At first, Jim was really not into this whole UFO researcher thing. That is until Jim's twin brother, Jack, the other wiener, confessed that he too was having extreme nightmares. Why are you laughing?
The other wiener. I'm sorry.
He told Jim that he was experiencing the same disturbing images, and he described dreams very similar to the dreams that Jim was having. The wieners were having the same dreams.
Twin wieners, twin dreams.
The dreams were always the same. There were humanoid creatures. Jim and the three other men were always naked. Jack and the three other men were always naked. And like Jim, he always felt violated and scared. And when Jim confessed to Jack that he too was having these dreams, the brothers knew that something weird and more sinister was going on.
That would be really weird to have the same dream as someone else.
I've always wanted that, though.
Really?
It's been a dream of mine to have a dream, the same dream as another person.
Wow.
Wouldn't that be so cool?
That would be very cool. But you're not Jack Wiener, so.
No, sadly.
Sorry.
I'm not. There was one specific element to the dream that really stuck out to the men. Because in every dream, both Jim and Jack, Chuck and Charlie were always present. This was when the twins put two and two together and wondered if their strange nightmares may be attributed to a strange encounter they once experienced in Maine on a camping trip. The camping trip that Noelle just spoke about. It just so happened that Jim's doctor saw in the newspaper that a man named Ray Fowler was lecturing at a UFO symposium at Waltham, Massachusetts. Hope I said that right, in May of 1988. Ray was the MUFON director of investigations. Some of you may be asking, what the hell is MUFON? I think we've spoken about it before, but for those who don't know.
It's like when you're in one place for a really long time and it's just time to move on and you gotta go somewhere else.
You gotta move on, man. But MUFON is a nonprofit group made up of just normal people.
So normal.
Your average Joe. And these people study reported UFO sightings, and the group is based in the U.S. with more than 4,000 members worldwide and chapters in more than 43 countries, but all 50 states.
Got to.
MUFON is actually one of the oldest and largest UFO groups there is.
I want to join MUFON.
Well, you can. If you want to.
Maybe I will. I'll be the only woman.
I'm sure there are other women, but go for it. There is a little debate, though, about the group because it is heavily criticized because a lot of their claims are unsupported. And the fact that the group is composed of amateur volunteers always allows for a lot of conspiracy-driven results and really just members believing everything just simply because they want to believe.
Yeah, well, I know for a fact, if you post something in a Facebook group, it's real.
Yeah, duh.
So
if you post anything on Facebook, it's real.
Have you heard of the internet? Because the internet doesn't lie.
It's not fake. Everything is true.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. But enough about MUFON.
Let's move on from this.
Let's move on. Jim's doctor convinced him to go to Ray's lecture and talk to him about his experience and, well, possible abduction. Jim told Ray about the camping trip on the Allegash Waterway. He told him about the strange light in the sky, the missing time, and the recurring dreams that he and his brother were both having. In January 1989, Ray Fowler began a formal investigation into the case. He enlisted the help of MUFON UFO entity specialist and physicist David Webb and MUFON hypnosis consultant Tony Constantino.
Hey, I'm Tony Constantino.
Hey, I'm trying to do a hypnosis session over here.
Hey, I'm hypnotizing here.
Hypnotizing here. The group investigated the four men over a period of 2 years. Each of the Allegash Four had to sign MUFON forms, and then they were interrogated.
Did they, like, waterboard them?
Honestly, they might have, because remember, these are just civilians, and they just can do whatever the fuck they want.
It's true. Interrogate is a heavy word.
Yeah. And we'll say that they did.
I'd like to think that they did get waterboarded.
Yeah, we're going to go with it.
Sort of nice.
Mm. Each story that was given by the Allegash Four was cross-checked with each other. A character check was also performed. Not sure what that entails, but basically it was just to make sure that these guys weren't liars or just out to fake this for fame and fortune, which I think is something we've learned never really happens with alien stories.
No, dude. You just look like a fucking crazy person.
Yeah.
I was abducted. Give me some money.
No.
No! It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Actually, a part of this character check, they spoke to the head forest ranger of the Allegash Waterway, and they interviewed him about the whole situation, and he even said that he remembered that the men were there, and he also stated that the men even reported the object in the sky to him, you know, the same one who said it was just like a hardware store opening.
Yeah, yeah. There were these guys, right? And they had a truck with a spotlight in the back.
Right, right.
And they were shining it all around for some reason, this lake, to signal that there had been a grand opening at 9 p.m. of a hardware store in the area.
In case anyone was camping. Yeah. Because they needed to know.
In case you need a wrench at 9 o'clock at night.
He also claimed that he reported it to the Dow Air Force Base in Bangor, Maine. So, I mean, their story checked out.
Yeah. And then the Dow Air Force Base is like, no, I've been to that hardware store. They did just have a grand opening. It was great. They did one of those sales where you get the paper bag and anything that fits in is 50% off. And I got to tell you, I got a lot of rope, a lot of duct tape, a lot of road flares. What? What are you doing this weekend?
Jim had mentioned the missing time. And once he says this to Ray, Ray just knew that that probably meant that they were abducted, and he decided that he wanted to put each man through a hypnosis session to try to recall the missing pieces from that night.
And Tony cracked his knuckles, because he knew it was his time to shine.
He's up. From the beginning, Ray suspected that the men may have been abducted by the thing they saw in the sky that night. As a UFO researcher, he was all too familiar with cases like theirs. But Ray didn't tell the men this little tidbit. Instead, he let each man, one by one, go through the hypnosis session, and what they discovered was bone-chilling.
All right, you're going to look at this watch, right? It's me. It's Tony.
Constantino.
You're going to look at this watch. It's my great-grandfather's watch. You watch it? You go back and forth. Back and forth. You're getting sleepy. Real sleepy. Real sleepy. Real sleepy. Real sleepy. All right, I'm hypnotizing here.
Each man promised not to tell what was recovered during their session until every session was complete, so as not to poison anyone's mind with any ideas.
I'll never tell.
It's the motto of Guys Weekend, that's actually.
And the MUFON motto.
They really wanted each man just to go in with a fresh mind, fresh start, and to just see if everything added up. While under hypnosis, all four of the men described a very disturbing UFO abduction experience. All of the men stated that they were beamed up from the canoe, by a strange light or object in the sky, sort of like a tube-like beam. Once aboard the spacecraft, the men described encountering the same humanoid beings Jim recalled seeing in his dreams. The men stated they were also under a sort of weird mind control. They were forced into doing what they were told, and they didn't really have the capability to fight back.
That is so scary.
Yeah. All of the men had memories of the aliens making them strip their clothes off.
Real slow.
And then had them sit on a bench in a misty room.
It was mist. It wasn't like a nice sauna.
Mm-mm.
This is very upsetting.
The aliens checked their eyes and their mouths with a rod with a light on the end of it.
Oh, it's just Mr. Proby.
Mr. Proby. And then they placed the men in a harness and flexed their limbs.
This is, look, I didn't think that this episode was going to be so sexual.
Yeah, me neither, but I mean, it's
getting hot in here. It's getting misty in here.
It's going there. It's going there. Then each man was forced to lie on a table where the aliens appeared to perform medical examinations on all of them. They used handheld devices and also some larger machines that were placed on top of the men. The men recalled that the aliens took samples of their skin and body fluids, such as saliva, blood, urine, and semen.
Hey, get that wiener semen. Get it.
All about the wiener semen. I know, it's so gross. After the men were examined, they were told to get dressed and then brought to a different room with what they described as a portal. The men were told to walk into the portal, and then from this portal, they each remembered floating back down to their canoe as each man was gently placed right back where he had been sitting before. Another strange thing that was discovered in the hypnosis sessions was that the Wiener twins, Jim and Jack Wiener, had experienced this before without their knowledge. In fact, the two men had been visited before by these creatures and even abducted when they were children. All of this was revealed in their hypnosis sessions.
Imagine being Charlie and Chuck mm-hmm. and being like, you did this to me. You Wiener twins know these guys and you probably tipped them off to where we were going to be. And then what? That's right. I'm missing an Arby's coupon out of my wallet. Okay. Don't think I didn't notice. I had $1 bills in there, and now I only have 3, and my Arby's coupon is missing. And you know what's convenient? It was for a cheesy beef for $3. You set this up, Wiener twins.
After the hypnosis session, each man was asked to draw a picture of what they had just uncovered from the depths of their minds. Because remember, they were all art students, so they could draw.
That's true.
And you can actually find the drawings online. We'll post some of them, actually, for you guys. All 4 of the drawings show the men being taken aboard the craft while they were in the canoe, sort of like a tractor beam emitting from the bright light that they had spotted. In Jim's hypnosis, he tells of how he wanted to attack the beings and throttle them.
Okay.
Are you going to make a comment about the word throttle?
I'm sorry, Jim Wiener wants to throttle someone?
He did not like the humanoid beings, and he just didn't believe they should be doing this to people, which, I mean, I feel like that's a normal reaction.
I'm gonna throttle you.
Jack, the other Wiener twin, recalls the faces of the humanoids being very terrifying and always very up close to his face, like, you know, breathing into him,
like,
I guess.
Like intimidating him on purpose.
I guess.
Like they're doing that thing where you, like, kind of, like, go at someone. Like,
Wiener. Jack recalled them saying things and explaining things to him with their eyes. So they were speaking to him through his head, telling him not to be afraid and that they weren't going to harm him and just to do whatever they said. Charlie Foltz said he was very afraid and felt as though he was in a doctor's office because it was cold, like a doctor's office was cold. And then they put this panel over his chest and they scraped his arms and his chest and then his legs and his thighs. Also very sexual.
It's so hot.
So hot right now. He said he just kept thinking of how he wanted to be back in the canoe. Chuck Rack explained that he saw, explained what he saw them doing to Charlie. He said they had some sort of silver device on him, and he said it looked like it was meant to suck something out of him, and Charlie looked like he was in pain.
No, that wasn't pain. That wasn't pain at all.
He said that he was just there, and he couldn't do anything but watch them violate Charlie. After these sessions, Ray Fowler brought the men together in a room and told them that during each of their sessions, they all recalled similar events. The men were stunned. They were basically finishing each other's sentences after that, recalling what they had seen, because after this, it was just all coming back to them. It wasn't just what they found in the sessions that was, I mean, obviously evidence enough, but there was also physical evidence left after the abductions as well. Jack had strange burns at the bottom of his feet, and he also had a scoop mark, just like, I guess, scooped out of the side of his leg above his ankle. I know. The mark was just above a scar that Jack had after getting a lump removed from his leg that had just appeared overnight.
Oh, implant. Mm.
Jack went to the doctor after this lump appeared, but the doctor thought it was just a cyst, so he referred him to a surgeon to have it removed. And Jack just thought nothing of it until now. Jack was actually told by doctors that they had no idea what this was, and so they sent it to the Center for Disease Control, or the CDC, in Atlanta. But when Jack inquired about his records, he discovered that the CDC had then sent this lump to a military pathologist in Washington, D.C.
Whoa.
To undergo further analysis by a United States Air Force colonel.
All right. It's kind of weird, right?
When Jack tried to get more information about this mysterious lump that was removed from his body, the surgeon would not cooperate, and Jack was never given any answers, which is pretty freaking suspicious.
Dude, that was so an implant.
Right. After the hypnosis sessions, each of the Allagash Four took polygraph tests. They all passed. Each man was deemed honest and telling the truth. The investigation concluded in a 702-page report, eventually made into a book called The Allagash Abductions, by Raymond E. Fowler.
The world's hardest book to get a hold of. Yes.
And the men continued to maintain their story. That is, until 2016.
That's right. Despite the unwavering stories told by the Wiener twins of Wiener twin fame and Charlie Fultz, the last of the four men, Chuck Rack, had gone on to deny that the whole event ever happened. In August of 2016, during a phone interview, Chuck walked back his original story of the abduction. He said point blank that it did not happen. Quote, "The reason I supported the story at first was because I wanted to make money."
Like that happens.
Right? Which, like, okay, honestly, who thinks that telling this kind of story would make them any money?
I mean, it might get you fame and you might be able to talk at, like, some UFO conventions, but I don't see you getting rich from this.
I feel like there's not a lot of money in conventions.
Yeah.
So, according to Chuck, the group did absolutely witness a UFO that night in their canoe on Eagle Lake. Interestingly, he also claims that the group saw an alien spacecraft two nights before that night as well, while fishing at night on Chamberlain Lake.
So he's saying that they saw a UFO, but he's saying all this abduction shit is just wrong.
Correct.
Okay.
Chuck said that they saw a bright light that night on Chamberlain Lake, but there was no tractor beam. There was no missing time. He said that they also saw a bright light in the sky, and then it went away.
Okay, but this happened, like, I mean, a head injury had to happen in order for all of this to, like, come to light. So were they just, like, playing the long game? Is that his?
I guess.
Okay.
Several years? I don't know.
They had this planned.
Yeah. It's like, just sit and be patient, Chuck. You got this. You're just gonna play the long game here. The night on Eagle Lake, the light was brighter, and there was a tractor beam, But Chuck now claims that it never chased them. His story is sort of similar to the original story. Here's a quote from this 2016 interview. "I had an uncomfortable feeling of being stared at. I turned around and I saw this very, very bright globe of light in the sky. He described the light as, quote, changing color from white to red to green in a liquid kind of melding motion." He also maintains the story about the park ranger happening as well. Chuck said that the group never talked about aliens or abductions, never talked about missing time, or even the possibility of anything stranger than weird lights in the sky, until years later when Jim Weiner had his fall and then he began to experience his seizures. So before that, they were just kind of like, oh yeah, that was crazy. Did you see that light? And right. Then that's all that happened, according to him.
Well, because they didn't know. They didn't have the hypnosis sessions.
Well, if you'll remember that dope hypnosis story that he told where nothing conveniently happened to him, but it did to everyone else. Yeah. Well, he claims that he just made the whole thing up to just fit in. Okay. Yeah. You know, like when the cool kids are like telling abduction stories, so you're like, you kind of fudge the truth and then maybe you have an abduction story right. too. Yeah, it's exactly like that.
But, okay, so I'd also like to point out, he also went on Unsolved Mysteries. They interviewed him, so he also went on Unsolved Mysteries just to, like, be cool like everyone else.
Yeah, he also went on the Joan Rivers show to be cool just like everyone else. Chuck said that he liked the attention that he got in the 90s after Fowler's book was released. He said, quote, "We were compelled to stay together, all speculating that this thing could get us into the millions of dollars for each of us. But we made very little."
Yeah, shocker. That's usually what happens. Yeah,
no shit, Chuck. I feel like people just want to point fingers at and laugh at abductees and not pay them money.
Right, and then everyone forgets about your story like 5 years later.
Uh-huh, so. Until we bring it up and we make fun of them.
Until we bring it up on our podcast.
After a falling out with the Weiner twins and Charlie, Chuck began telling people that everything was a hoax since his loyalties were pretty much non-existent at that point. He never said that the story was a hoax, but he prefers to call it brilliant storytelling, going on to say it's not the truth, but I admire the storytelling ability of these guys. So they saw the UFOs, according to him, mm-hmm. but there was no abduction.
Okay.
They all totally made up that whole hypnosis thing, even though they were actually under hypnosis, mm-hmm. but it was all just fake.
Right.
They lied to Unsolved Mysteries. They lied to Joan Rivers.
They lied to a lie detector test and passed. That's impressive. Chuck.
The lost time, for me, is the stickiest point mm-hmm. of, like, this whole story.
Yeah.
I feel like this is the part that really gives the alien abduction story a backbone, since missing time is just an absolute hallmark of an abduction.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, Chuck Nell says that that whole bit was complete bullshit.
Okay.
Yeah. He said that the fire, which was once described as being so large that it would take hours to burn out, was actually not that big now that he remembers. He said what was first relayed as large logs was actually more like, I don't know, 2.5-3 inch wide sticks. And most of the wood was much smaller than that. He said that the fire would have actually burned off very quickly. But by contrast, in the same year, Charlie Foltz claimed the opposite, saying, quote, "Some of the wood we put on there was about the diameter of my leg. I would say at least a good 10 inches in diameter easily." So these two dudes are telling pretty much the opposite story at this point.
Also, why would you build a fire and only do it so it's going to burn out in like 30 minutes?
Well,
what's the point of doing that?
I don't know, just like push like a bunch of dried leaves together and light on fire.
Yeah, like just kindling sticks.
I have no idea.
And then peace out and go fishing.
And go night fishing with the boys in the canoe.
Right.
Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you want it to be dark? Just you and the boys in the water. The best part for me is that Chuck said the four boys were eating drugs the entire time they were on the trip. Yeah. Supposedly, Jack Weiner brought something Chuck described as, quote, Afghan temple ball.
What the hell?
I have no idea what this is.
I don't know what that is either.
But he brought it and he shared it with everyone.
Okay. I'm in. Sure. Pass that shit.
I don't know, dude. I don't eat drugs. So I've no idea what an Afghan temple ball could possibly be. But it sounds like some amazing drug that you could only get in the 70s.
Well, they were art students, so I'm not going to say that there weren't drugs involved, but an Afghan temple ball.
I don't know.
If anyone knows what that is, please enlighten us, because I want to know.
Not to sound like a fucking loser right now.
I want to try it.
But what kind of drug comes in ball form? Was this really Wiener and the Afghan temple balls? So anyways, Chuck said that they were just all totally stoned off their ass on Afghan temple ball. And when they got into the canoe on Eagle Lake, they were just tripping hard.
Well,
Jim Wiener said that publicly on the Joan Rivers show that they did not eat any drugs or drink any alcohol the night of their encounter. Charlie Foltz also denied eating drugs that night.
Well, you're not going to go on Joan Rivers and tell her that you took some Afghan temple ball.
No, how you look at Joan Rivers' beautiful old lady face.
You can't say that.
Say, yeah, I was pounding Afghan temple ball.
You can't say that to her.
Do you smoke it? I want to know what this is. I'm obsessed.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm so curious.
I want some Afghan temple ball in my life. So Charlie claims that they brought only 1 8-pack of beer on their canoe trip.
That's a goddamn lie. For four men? Okay, that's a straight up lie.
Dude, he's so weirdly detailed with this. He says, we each had one beer at Telos Landing the very first night. And then we each had one beer at Fort Kent the last day of our canoe trip. We carried those 8 bottles in and we carried those 8 bottles back out.
Call me an alcoholic, but who just drinks one beer just to drink a beer?
I don't know.
If I want to drink a beer, I want to drink a beer to get a buzz. And I'm not going to do that by just drinking one.
I'm sorry. Okay? You and your 3 art student friends aren't just going to drink one beer.
And then wait, and then the next day drink the other one because you only brought 8. Yeah, no. That's not how my trip's going.
You're at least going to drink both on the same night.
Exactly.
Well, he counted those bottles. He knows, Nicole, because he remembers that they all did that thing where they put the bottles like on their fingers and they clinked them together. And they're like, warriors, come out and play. But there weren't enough bottles for Chuck to do it.
So he was pissed. That's why he's lying now. That's why he's saying that they're all liars.
Yeah, that's why he's going back on it. He didn't get to be part of the Warriors gag, and he was very upset.
He was left out.
The rest of the group, interestingly, remembers that Chuck was very violent in temper. In a 2016 interview with Jim Wiener, he doubled down saying, quote, I personally believe that Mr. Rack, which is aggressive to not call him Chuck.
Yeah.
Mr. Rack's self-aggrandizing rationalizations and disparaging accusations are simply the rantings of an angry and resentful individual on whom his former friends have turned their backs.
You want to know why he's so mad?
Why?
Because they needed a babysitter for their trip. Not just their trip, like their drug, the Afghan ball trip. And then he drew the short straw, so he had to be the babysitter and watch everyone, and that's why he's so angry about the whole thing.
Yeah, dude, he was pissed. He's like, my twin wiener brought this Afghan temple ball, and now I can't even partake in this drug. However we take it, according to how you take Afghan temple ball.
However you take it, I can't take it. So that's all that matters.
I only have one fucking beer in me. It's lukewarm. Don't even get to smoke the Afghan temple ball or snort it or whatever we do.
And I couldn't even do the Warriors thing. He was so pissed.
He was so pissed.
Never let it go.
According to Charlie Foltz and Jim Wiener, Chuck wanted everyone to band together to, quote, make $1 million off the Allagash case. By refuting the way that Raymond Fowler handled their case and the hypnosis, he wanted to cause a media frenzy and sell their, quote, true story to the press. But the others maintained that what happened to them actually happened. Chuck said that he does not dispute that alien abductions are possible, but neither him nor his artist friends were abducted in 1976.
Sure, Chuck. Sure.
It's very interesting how he's like, no, this shit's real. We saw aliens, but we didn't, like, go up there.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know.
Well, with every abduction story, or I guess with basically any paranormal story, always come skeptics. So it's a no-brainer that people came out of the woodwork to accuse these men of lying and suggest possibilities for why the men could have come up with the exact same story. And I guess also all pass lie detector tests.
Yeah, well, there was some Afghan temple ball in it for them, so they had a lot to lose.
Some suggested that images from movies and popular culture filled the men's minds, and this is actually where their story came from. The 1953 movie Invaders from Mars was cited as a possible inspiration for their story. Dr. William Cohn, a clinical psychologist who specializes in the study of repressed memory and hypnotic therapy, believes exactly that, this whole event was just completely media-driven. He said, "This movement is media-driven. People hear about good cases on TV. They think they might have had the same thing happen to them. It sort of feeds upon itself." He believes that if you see this on TV or you hear about it, then you can just think that it happened to you. And he also blames Ray Fowler. He said, "Researchers have a very clear agenda about what they are looking for."
Research. That's what they're looking for. They're looking for research. So he is correct in this one.
Exactly. So if you have someone who is doing the UFO abduction investigation, it is a person who has already decided that UFO abductions are real, that thousands of people are having them. They have a list of symptoms, and if you come in the door with these symptoms, then you must have been kidnapped.
This guy's a party pooper.
He's a huge party pooper, and they had him on Unsolved Mysteries, and he doesn't look fun at all.
No, he just poops at parties.
He just poops at all of the parties. He thinks that UFO researchers like Ray, and I guess MUFON, go into these types of cases with an agenda. Because Ray was already researching UFOs and abductions, so once this case came across his desk, his automatic first thought was abduction. Which, I can see.
I get that. Yeah. But they did the whole hypnosis thing.
Yeah, there's just too much going on here. I mean, at least for me. But I guess this is also why MUFON gets a bad rep. Like I mentioned earlier, they want it to be an abduction case, so in their minds, it already is. Psychiatrist John E. Mack, and also the author of a book called Abduction, disagrees with Dr. Cohn, and he says, usually these are people who have no interest in abductions, have not read about it, are unfamiliar with the beings, and are shocked and astounded when they hear someone else has had these experiences as well, or that there is material in the media about it.
I agree. It's like if you want it bad enough, it's not going to happen.
No, trust me, I know.
Yeah, Nicole's a prime example. She wants to be abducted.
I want to be haunted.
Not happening.
It has never happened.
No, you can't want it. Mm-hmm. You got to just not know it exists, not think about it, put it out of your mind. It's like love. You can't look for love.
Yeah.
You can't look for probing, okay? It's got to come to you.
It's just got to happen.
Let Mr. Proby come to you.
So John Mack doesn't buy that this is media driven at all. And honestly, neither do I.
Agreed.
He says in regards to abductees that he has encountered, he says it doesn't work like that. The person comes because they've heard that I'm open to listen to something which other therapists or other mental health professionals have not been able to listen to. He says this is not a club that anyone wants to belong to. And honestly, I agree, Dr. Mack. I agree.
I too agree, Dr. Mack. Like, why would you want to be abducted by aliens?
I mean, I do, but I can understand why you wouldn't.
Right. I'm using you in the general sense here.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's scary, dude. You don't want to be abducted by aliens.
If they bring me back.
See, but they might not. You don't actually want to be abducted by aliens.
That's true. It would be scary. It would be a cool, like, story to tell, though.
If you get to come back.
Yeah.
What if they just eat your brains?
They're not going to eat my brains.
What if they do?
They're not going to.
You don't know.
Then you got to find another co-host.
What? God damn it.
So, yeah, that is the story of the Allagash 4.
It's pretty good.
Pretty good.
It's a pretty fun story. And also, if you haven't had it, Allagash White's pretty good. It comes in 4 packs, one for each boy.
Delicious. Mm-hmm. One for each boy. It did come in a four pack.
Mine were for the Wiener twins. Corrected for the Wiener twins.
You had the Wiener twins, and I had Chuck and Charlie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's nice.
I was going to try to put them on my fingers and click, but it's not working. I put one finger in and I was like, yep, that hurts. I'm not going to do the other one. You were committed, man.
It hurts so much. We're here with
Aubrey.
And she's going to tell us some scary stories because right now you're listening to
Aubrey's Scary Stories.
That's right. Take it away, Aubrey.
So there was once this robot. And it used to help everybody. And this is it called it the people from the dead who gets back alive.
Whoa, this sounds so scary.
Oh, I can't wait.
Oh my God, I can't wait.
We're very excited.
So the robot goes to a restaurant. He works there. And he always it helps people with their plates and stuff.
Oh, that's nice.
And then there was this knocking on the door, and the robot went to go and check it. Mm-hmm. And it said it, and the person was an animal control person. And checked if there were any animals in the thing.
Were there?
He was actually evil.
Whoa. He was in disguise?
Yeah. And he brings people that are dead back to life.
So then what happened?
So once he checked if there were any animals, he saw one and he didn't really care.
Because he was a necromancer.
Yeah. He doesn't really know what animal controls are.
Mm. Does he know what necromancy is?
Nope.
Okay. He does his own thing.
Yeah, that's fine.
It's fine.
Everyone's got their own thing going on.
And he would always go to it. He would always go to the graveyard, and he would always be getting some potions into his house, then digging up people from the graveyard. Then he would always bring them back to his house. When he first brought one back from the graveyard to his house, he would always be, like the first day he did it, he would keep it as a skeleton so he knew the body parts of a person.
Whoa.
Ooh. So he was learning from the skeletons?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well.
And then he had a great idea that day.
What was his idea?
Uh-oh.
His idea was to bring people back from the dead because his wife had died.
Oh, that's so sad.
And
he missed her.
Yeah. Mm. And he wanted to bring her back from the dead, but things didn't go so well. He was actually a good guy back then.
Oh.
And then things didn't go so well because she turned into a zombie.
Zombies!
She was good at first when he brought her back, but then she started going when she would be around a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
She would always keep on saying brains.
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 Brains. And then he got really worried, so he grabbed a knife and it sliced her in half and put her back to the graveyard.
Wow.
And then before he was even finished, she pulled him in.
Wow. Whoa. That escalated quickly.
Sure did.
And then he wanted to see the world again, but she was choking him.
And then what happened?
He died.
Did she eat his brains?
Nope.
No.
She just choked him to death.
Mm. Wow.
And then when she was finished, she got back out of the hole. Then she brought him in. As a skeleton, he was a skeleton, and it brought him back to life and used the human potion on both of them.
So then they were both alive?
Yeah, they were both humans again.
Oh, that's nice.
That's a good ending.
Happy ending.
But they were zombies still inside.
So then
they walked to the restaurant, and they would always go there to eat some food, but she and he would always, when nobody was looking, they would always eat a person's brain.
At the restaurant?
Yeah.
When no one was looking?
Yeah.
That's so scary.
They took pieces out of the food, so it looked like that they chewed it.
So they tricked people.
Yeah.
What did the robot do, though? Didn't he work at the restaurant?
Yeah, he wasn't looking either until the zombies went right behind him.
But he doesn't have a brain, right?
Yeah, but they can chew his head off.
Oh, no! Oh,
no!
But lucky for him, he got robot stuff in his body, so he can still see, but he doesn't have a head.
Oh, okay.
He's kind of like the headless horse.
He's the headless robot.
He can see, but he doesn't have a head.
Oh, okay.
I guess it could be worse.
And he faked that he was dead. Like, he fell on the ground as fake.
Oh.
So they thought that he was dead forever, and when they weren't looking, he would always get up.
Wow.
So he tricked them, and then he lived.
Yeah.
Oh. It's a smart robot.
Very smart.
How you have to kill a robot, you have to grab a hammer and punch it with the hammer.
That's the only way?
Yeah.
You heard it here first.
Good to know.
And then they saw that the robot was moving. And then they were like, give me a hammer.
Oh, no!
To one of the bakers. And then they were like, I will eat your brain. And they give the hammer to that person, and they were like, what for? And she was like, oh, I'm just going to smash that robot.
Oh, so she didn't even try to lie. She just said it?
And they thought a different robot, not the baker robot.
Oh.
And she started smashing him.
Wow.
But lucky for him, he had batteries inside his hand, so he can still do it.
So he's just a hand now?
Yeah.
And he crawled away?
And then she saw him moving and used the hammer on.
Oh, no.
And she was like, and it smashed him into pieces.
So the robot died?
Yep, he's gone now, but he can regenerate.
Oh, okay.
There was a pinky left, and it was like,
he can regenerate like the pinky did all the work.
Okay, so then he can regenerate into something else.
To regenerate. Yeah.
He regenerated it into a cute little puppy.
Oh.
And then the puppy was like, I'm just going to do something to that zombie. Then he bited the both of the zombies.
Revenge.
Bited both of the zombies' legs, and he ripped the heart, and then he smashed them with his paws, so that's the end of the story.
So he saved the day.
Yeah.
The puppy robot saved the day.
Nice. Yeah.
That's my favorite story you've told.
That's my favorite one, too, I think.
Look at you taking clues from your surroundings.
Whoa! You took that story from that Evil Dead poster?
And
you should write movies.
And I got it from the robot too.
Nice. Oh. Look at you.
So creative.
So clever.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. Nice. Mm-hmm. You gonna write movies when you grow up?
Yeah.
I think you could. I think you'd be a really good horror movie director.
Yeah.
And writer.
This has been Aubrey with the Scary Stories. I am your host, Aubrey. Join our Patreon at www.patreon.com/Aubrey with the Scary Stories. Remember, celebrate the strange and keep it unusual. Bye.
All right. Well, if you guys want to read any of our source material, you can find it in the show notes. And also, if you can get your hands on one of those Allagash abduction books.
Yeah.
I want to read it. If you send it, if you send it, we'll read it and we'll send it back to you. We won't keep it.
Mm-hmm. If you have any spooky stories, were you abducted by aliens?
Oh my God, do you want to be?
Tell us. Send your listener lore to quiteunusualpod@gmail.com.
Yes, or you can always slipper slide into our DMs. Keep it sexy, you know what I mean? Just like, let's do it, whatever. Who cares anymore?
Mr. Proby it.
Yeah. Slip in like Mr. Proby into our DMs. We're on Facebook, Instagram. We're on Twitter now. We're on Reddit. You can pretty much find us on all the bullshit social medias. We're at Quite Unusual Pod. Hit us up and say hi.
And if you like what you hear, please, please, please tell a friend. Pass on the good word that our podcast rules.
Yeah, dude. Knock on people's doors. Okay, this is what I want you to do. Go door to door. Wear a mask, though. Go door to door.
Yes.
And be like, safe. Hello. Have you heard the good word? Do you have a moment to talk about our Lord and Savior? Quite unusual. Wow.
Pod.
That was nice. We didn't rehearse that. You guys are welcome. Mm. And also, if you have anything fun that you want to send us, maybe like, I don't know, you want to shit in a bag and put it in the mail.
Don't send us
or like you want to send us a crystal or like a love note. Or
we would love a crystal.
Anything kind of cute. Just like say hi or some stickies or something. I don't care. Whatever. Anything. You can send it to P.O. Box 1212 in Des Plaines, Illinois 60017. And hopefully the sweet ladies at the post office won't let it on fire.
And we have a couple new patrons to thank. So our first one, we'd like to welcome you, Andy L.
And Christina C. Welcome to the coven. Thank you very much for your support.
And remember to celebrate the strange.
And keep it unusual. Bye. Bye. Praise be to the all-knowing leaders, supporters of the pod, and benevolent beings.
We're going with that?
Should we?
Yeah, do it.
Was it bad?
No, I liked it.
Okay.
Spencer W., a tiny gremlin who loves Space Jam so much, they insist they could beat Michael Jordan at a one-on-one basketball game.
You wish, gremlin boy. Tim M., who is currently working on a re-envisionment of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but instead of chainsaws, just like a lot of toothpicks.
Don't know if that's going to take off. Back to the drawing board. Savannah L., a can of corn that became animated when a witch's spell went rogue. Luckily, they already love slicing people's ankles with open rusty cans.
Ooh, so much closer to the ground now. Nice. Samantha P., she found the silver cup that had been lost at Roanoke. Now, they use it to eat breakfast cereal out of.
Hope it's Lucky Charms. Mike B., the wizard who was supposed to take Harry Potter's place at Hogwarts, but instead got into University of Miami.
Party school. Nice. Lauren R., born to the queen of the spider realm, has 8 legs, 8 feet! And an affinity for designer heels.
Ooh, I'd love to see their closet. Kaylee O., an axe-wielding maniac who just wants a friend.
Axe-wielding for two, please. Jess H., a psychic medium who uses their powers only to tell when one will burn their lip on too hot of pizza rolls.
Wow. Does it work on bagel bites, too?
I hope so.
Evan K., the keeper of the golden seashells of the lost city of Fatlantis. They use these sacred shells to eat guac and queso at alarming rates instead of having to worry about chewing tortilla chips.
Honestly, that's a pretty good myth. And Adam R., a ventriloquist doll who came to life, only to realize that making your own life decisions is honestly exhausting.
Tell me about it. Thank you to all of our Coven members on Patreon. Without you, we are nothing.
We're not worthy.
We're not worthy.
We're not worthy.
We're not worthy.
We're like super not worthy, I promise.